Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Advances in biomedical research seek to enhance health, lengthen life, and reduce the burdens of illness and disability. The National Institutes of Health, NIH, plays a central role in making this all happen. Its basic research and translational advances have prompted a revolution in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of diseases. As a result, U.S. life expectancy has increased dramatically over the past century and still continues to improve. Not only are people living longer, they are living healthier lives. However, science is not a 100-yard dash. It's a marathon. A marathon run by a relay team that includes researchers, patients, industry experts, lawmakers, and the public. This is a remarkable time of discovery, and the opportunities in science and medicine are at once exciting and urgent. How has basic research prompted a revolution in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of diseases? What is NIH doing to advance biomedical research to enhance human life and health? And how does the investment in such research increase the country's global competitiveness? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Dr. Francis Collins, Director of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Collins, welcome to the show. It's terrific to have you.
It's wonderful to be with you.
Dr. Collins, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you can provide us with a brief overview of the history and mission of the National Institutes of Health. When was it created and what's its mission to date?
We are celebrating our 125th anniversary. NIH, its original form, which was a hospital particularly focused on mariners who had a lot of problems with tuberculosis, founded in 1887. And that point was in Staten Island. It gradually moved to Washington and ultimately to Bethesda, and has been really our nation's major investment in biomedical research now for many decades, the largest such institution in the world.
So with such an interesting mission, could you give us a sense of the scale of operation within the organization? How is it organized, the size of its budget, number of employees?
There are about 17,000 full-time employees plus contractors that work for the National Institutes of Health. A wide variety of skill sets. Many of them are distinguished scientists with doctoral degrees, but lots of other people work on the campus in Bethesda and in the other units that we operate, including one of our institutes in North Carolina, some other activities in Baltimore, and others in Montana. So we are scattered a bit, but the main focus is on our campus right up here on Wisconsin Avenue in Bethesda, Maryland.
Great. I'd like to get a sense of the composition of your research portfolio. What percent of research is conducted in-house versus awarded through NIH's competitive grants program?
So about 11% of the budget is devoted to research in what we call our intramural program. And those are both basic and clinical studies done on our facilities, including the main one here in Bethesda. And that includes the largest research hospital in the world, the Clinical Center of NIH, 240 beds, all utilized for clinical protocols. Patients come here from all over the country, all over the world, to be part of these clinical research studies. The remainder of our budget primarily goes out in grants to our nation's finest institutions, and some outside the country as well. Investigators send us their best ideas. They're reviewed in a two-level peer review system, which is very rigorous. And the ones that are judged most meritorious then get supported. So 85% of our budget goes out in grant awards to those investigators. And by the way, our overall budget this year is about $30.8 billion. So it's a very substantial amount of taxpayers' money for which we are grateful and feel very responsible.
So, Doctor, you've done a wonderful job of setting the context and giving us a sense of what NIH actually does and how it does it. I'd like to focus a little bit more on your specific responsibilities as the director of NIH. Would you tell us more about your duties and the areas under your purview?
It's an amazing job, and no day is like any other. I am responsible for standing at the helm of this remarkable ship of discovery and trying to see if it can be steered in the direction that is going to have the greatest benefit to the public. So that means I oversee the actions of 27 institutes and centers which make up the NIH, each of which is led by a distinguished scientist who is a director of one of those institutes. I'm particularly responsible for looking out for opportunities where we can do things in a collaborative way across institutes, so that, for instance, if there's a problem with obesity research, can we get all the institutes to work together on that? And also for looking at opportunities to collaborate outside of NIH with other government agencies like FDA or CMS or CDC, and with other foundations or with industry. I spend a lot of my time trying to make sure, especially in this tight budget climate, that we're making the most of those collaborations.
So, Dr. Collins, how does your effort support the overall mission of HHS?
HHS is, of course, the department within the U.S. government responsible for health and human services, and NIH is the strongest component of that, focused on medical research to try to identify new ways to diagnose, to prevent, and to treat disease, and to try to increase the likelihood that all of us will live long and healthy lives and not have those shortened or diminished by chronic disease. That's a very large responsibility, but we feel that if you look historically, our contributions to the improvement of human health in America have really been quite dramatic.
Dr. Collins, regarding your responsibilities and duties, you've laid out, you have an expansive portfolio, a fairly large budget. What are the top three challenges you face in your position, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
It comes in three different categories. First, and maybe most important, is science. Where are the scientific opportunities? Science is moving very fast right now. We're able to do things that I wouldn't have dreamed 10 years ago would be possible in my lifetime, working with DNA sequencing, working with stem cells, coming up with ways to do imaging of the brain and people who are alive and thinking, and we're watching what happens when they do various tasks. Those are just amazing opportunities. And it is very much part of my job to be sure that we're pushing the envelope as hard as we can. So that's the top challenge. Connected to that is the need to be sure that we are training and retaining the best and brightest of our potential most important resource, the scientific researchers themselves. How do we make sure that we're identifying pathways so that young scientists can get the training they need and become highly productive, successful, creative, have careers that are both inspiring to us and to them? And third, and without which nothing else can happen, we need the resources to support all of this. And at a time where anything that the government is supporting is come into question because of our nation's fiscal challenges, I spend a lot of my time simply explaining why a dollar invested in biomedical research is an extremely good use of taxpayers' dollars, both in terms of what it can do for human health and actually how it stimulates our economy.
Dr. Collins, I'd like to learn more about yourself. You are a recognized physician geneticist and leader of the International Human Genome Project. Could you tell us a little bit about your career path for our listeners? How did you begin your career and what brought you to your current leadership role?
I think it'd be fair to say my career is pretty nonlinear, and certainly as a kid growing up on a small farm in the Shenandoah Valley, a farm that lacked indoor plumbing, you would not have necessarily encountered me as somebody who is going to be on this pathway, and I would have not believed it if you had suggested that. I got interested in science as a high school student, initially with the science of chemistry, and went on to get a PhD in physical chemistry before I realized that biology was calling and medicine was calling. So then I went to medical school, got to the point of realizing that genetics was really the thing that I found most inspiring and most exciting, and went from that to a university position, University of Michigan, and then was asked to come here to NIH in 1993 to direct the Human Genome Project, which has just barely gotten started at that point. That was a tough sell for me, I must say. One thing my mother said was, whatever you do, don't work for the federal government. And here I was being asked to do just that. But it's been phenomenal to have a chance to be surrounded by such amazing talent and to lead that effort, which read out for the very first time all of the letters of the Human DNA Instruction Book, pretty historic undertaking. Who would have dreamed that could happen to a kid growing up on that farm in the Shenandoah Valley? And now to be back at NIH, I took a year off in between and then got called back to be the NIH director just an exhilarating opportunity to try to encourage the best and brightest scientists to do the greatest research you could imagine.
It's a compelling story, and I'd like to get a sense from your experience. What are the characteristics of an effective leader, and more particularly, given your work leading the Genome Project, what lessons did you learn as the director that have informed your current efforts?
I'm sure I made a lot of mistakes, and I hope I learned from them, because I came to the job of leading the Genome Project with very little experience running anything much larger than my own research lab. But along the way, I learned one of the things you want to do is surround yourself with the smartest people, ideally people even smarter than you are, and then listen to them very carefully. And also surround yourself with people who are willing to tell you when you're about to do something that's not a good idea. You want people who are not afraid to speak the truth to the leader. And that has been enormously helpful. And to let everybody know that that is the expectation, that if you see something that Dr. Collins is about to do that you think is a mistake, you better speak up. I will never come down on you for that. But if you tell me later that you knew it and you didn't tell me, well, that'll be a problem. So, yeah, the ability to have that kind of a team is just critical. And, of course, any leader wants to be involved in a project where the mission is compelling, and where you can have a vision about where you want to go that is ambitious and audacious, and that you can get other people to share that. And I've been fortunate that the jobs I've had have had that quality so that it is possible to bring people to the table and get them pretty inspired about, you know, putting some of their own sort of personal considerations to the side, because the shared goal is so important. We're all going to put our shoulders to the wheel together.
How has basic research prompted a revolution in the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of diseases? We will ask Dr. Francis Collins, director of the National Institutes of Health, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.